And let's start with the discussion on the management commentary. I give the floor to Marie Claire.
Good morning. Today we would like to provide you with a brief update of the management commentary project so far, and particularly the decision by the board on the objective of management commentary, and to also ask for your views on the application of materiality and the principles for preparing management commentary. As you'll be aware, we had the first consultative group meeting in September to discuss the topics I just mentioned. We have also since sought the feedback of the Capital Markets Advisory Committee and the Global Preparers Forum. And summaries of their feedback is included in the slide decks we provided in advance of this meeting. In November, the board discussed the objective of management commentary, and it will continue its discussions on the remaining content of Stream 1 in the new year. The next consultative group meeting will take place on the 11th of January, and the discussion will focus on the analysis of the entity's performance. I would just like to remind you that the scope of the project is broader financial reporting, and as reflected in the objective, the audience of management commentary is primary users of financial reporting. At its November meeting, the board broadly agreed with the staff's recommendation that the objective of management commentary should be to give context for the primary financial statements by providing primary users with information and analysis that is useful in assessing the prospects for the entity's future net cash inflows and management stewardship of the entity's economic resources. So moving on to the topics for today's discussion, I would like to start with materiality. So last year, the board issued IFRS Practice Statement 2, applying materiality judgments. We think that the four-step approach to materiality in the practice statement can be applied to management commentary, but that more guidance is needed in relation to the first step of identifying information that has potential to be material. The approach we are proposing is to first identify the matters important to the entities, current and future cash flows, and then the information that is needed on those matters. So, in fact, we can move on to the first questions related to materiality, which are on page 14 of the agenda paper. And I would like to ask you whether you agree with discussing in the revised practice statement the proposed distinction between matters that need to be addressed in management commentary and material information about those matters. And one other question related to materiality is whether there are any other considerations around materiality that should be included in the practice statement.
Does anyone have material contributions? Andrew thinks he does.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. We thought it was helpful to clarify that materiality should be applied in the context of users' assessments of cash flows and prospects, and indeed to clarify who the audience is for the practice statements to provide a basis on which materiality judgments can be made. We don't really have an issue with the two-step approach, but you know, the difference between the first step of the two-step approach and the first step of the four-step approach in the materiality practice statement isn't intuitively obvious. And the first step in the practice statement is identify the information that has the potential to be material, which seems rather similar to identifying matters, which it's a little difficult also to identify, to think through what identifying these matters actually means until you've also looked at the guidance on content areas. Otherwise, it just looks like we're leaving it to preparers to figure out for themselves what the content ought to be without any wider framework in which to operate. But all the same, it could be useful to think in terms of matters and then information about those matters, sort of breaking down step one in the materiality statement into step 1A and step 1B in effect. So obviously materiality, preparers to produce their management commentary will need to make a lot of materiality judgments, but I wonder if materiality can be overused as a tool in this area. Materiality judgment in financial statements is, to a large extent, not entirely, but to a large extent, about filtering out information, because the financial reporting standards go a greater way to defining the population, the total population of information that might be included in the financial statements. And I think it's a different thing with a management commentary, where presumably the end product will be much more of a broad framework. And I wonder where this is taking us. I think one example I've been thinking through is the disclosure of risks and uncertainties. And do we actually want the Paris to have to disclose all of their material risks and uncertainties, or should it more, be more of a focus on the principal risks and uncertainties, which I think is a different thing. And I know the UK Financial Reporting Lab's done some interesting work in this area, which seems to take you more to a shorter list of risks that really keep management awake at night, so to speak, not all the material risks that could encompass a lot of stuff that's just generic to operating in a particular industry, for example. So I guess my point would be, I think you might need to have some other tools to complement materiality to encourage preparers to produce a report of the right volume and not excessive volume.
Paul?
Thank you. I agree with almost everything Andrew has said. But first of all, I think you're absolutely right, as the introduction made clear, that it needs to be absolutely clear what the objective of the management commentary is and who the audience is. And certainly when we were developing our revised guidance on the strategic report, those two things were quite difficult and quite challenging because of public policy issues. And I think the sort of diagram you've got in the pack up front is quite helpful in that regard. So be very clear on what the objective is and who the audience is. Like Andrew, I have some concern with this sort of, well, let's find out all of the matters that could be material and then see which ones are in fact material. I'm not sure it's quite such a two-stage approach, as it's much more of an integrated approach. Mm. I certainly think that the filter around what is material to the long-term success of the company is a good filter. I also agree that that typically leads one to think about the long-term cash flows. And that's the only way I can sort of visualize that. However, we do get challenged quite regularly that the way that discounted cash flows work, that things which management should be thinking about now and should be providing commentary on, perhaps because of the longer term impact of them and the way it's discounted back, it perhaps understates the significance of the matter and perhaps doesn't get quite as much attention. So I don't know how you solve that problem, but I think there are some things which might not strictly be material today if you look at a discounted cash flow model, but will inevitably be quite material to users, because if management aren't addressing now, whether it's climate type issues, whether it's technology or whatever it might be. But generally, I think we're very supportive in the line of direction you're going.
Well, a lot of that information might be more of qualitative nature, so mm-hmm. that discounting doesn't come into question anyway.
Yeah, but if you're using a filter, and this is where I got tangled up in this, is that if you're using a filter, long-term success of the company, and that's measured by long-term cash flows, you're sort of trying to put monetary values on it.
Well, but that's where I'm a bit hesitant to.
Sorry?
That's where I am a bit hesitant to.
Yeah.
Whether we.
Well, I think we're agreeing.
I think that the term cash flows can lead people. I mean, it's about long-term value, but cash flows comes very close to very precise calculations, and I don't think you can.
100, I mean, totally agree. I think we're absolutely agreed. It's terms of the challenge.
I don't know how we can work around that. But. Mm. Okay, so that's. Alexandro.
Well, pretty much my point. When you're talking about forecasts of future cash flow that are material important for the long-term success of organization, it means it can be pretty complicated to give numbers to those to be precise, because you talk cash flows to accountants. Accountants understand a number, not a precise number, not only a discussion about cash flows. And in some industries, cash flow for most of financial services is a. So nobody pays attention to cash flows. Really, of course, there are cash flows at the end of the day, but the profitability analysis is much more important than cash flows. So I would try to figure out something different from some sort of forecast of the statement of cash flows, which is some people will definitely understand this. Another point is It is very hard to read this and not think about giving guidance, which is I don't know if that's what you guys intend, but your brewery example, if I'm talking example you'd ever give later here, I understand. Sorry to go ahead, but you gave an example of a brewery company here in some. Is a brewery company or is that?
Twelve, maybe.
And then there is this threshold. But at the end of the day, what are you talking about? What was my profitability? How it behaved? With the typical management commentary, people think about it today is talking about the past. I talk about the current financial statements. Mm-hmm. So I'm explaining my current financial statements. When I'm talking about my profitability tomorrow, it becomes pretty linked with. For guidance, and I don't know if you guys are asking companies to give guidance, especially long term, because guidance is normally a short term thing. You know what I mean? It's a long term guidance, something that I don't even know that people could do. So I may be mistaken, but that's what I took from this.
Can I just clarify there? When you talk about guidance, you're meaning guidance on future earnings. Or are you meaning guidance on the?
Yeah, that's given a very actually on page 19 here. Say, well, we produce widgets during the year. The retail price of blue widgets at 1.6 times that of red widgets, and we are targeting a 70-30 blue-red widget sales mix. That's guidance. That's precise the definition of guidance. So based on that, I will forecast. Analysts will put that on their spreadsheets and get your. This is exactly like a retail companies that provide guidance. They provide guidance about the mix of their revenue. So
it's perhaps a distinction between where description of strategy stops and where guidance starts.
Yeah. Because if you want to be more long-term, it is strategic reporting, like kind of discussion. You cannot. Go deep, go as granularity, because this granularity is about end up becoming a guidance. So I think this is not what you guys are trying to do. So it's my advice is I'll take away for cash flows. I'm talking about more something more like profitability or something more general, and talking about longer term instead of because the guidance is a different regulation for guidance is a different. Completely different story. That depends on country to country. So countries have a precise regulation about guidance. So other countries don't. Some countries you do that in the MD&A. Some there's a profuse.
Okay. Well, I think we'll take that into the discussion on strategy, which will be a sort of one stream ahead of.
Yeah, and it'll be clearer here for you. Are you talking about guidance or not talking about guidance? My advice is don't talk about guidance, but put that clearly here. So. I'm not advised because if I read this here, I say, well, you're asking me to give guidance.
Yeah.
Example by 990 is you're giving me an example of a guidance. So, and I don't think that's what your intention in this case. Yeah.
Okay.
Just to come back on that, I think probably what we're trying to finesse is that some companies choose to express their strategy in terms of that type of guidance to give some parameters. Right. It's not formally giving earnings guidance, but it's a direction of where they're aiming to get to. And we see that in practice today, where perhaps there's a long-term strategic direction, change in direction of a business, change of its business model. It seeks to say, look, within 5 years, this is where we aim to be. And it's how we get that nuance right between not saying that's guidance, but saying this is an objective of where our business model is going, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Some companies do that, and I'm saying they don't. I'm just asking you, are you guys actually nurturing that practice? Because maybe I'm not talking about earnings guidance only. You can have revenue guidance, cost guidance. Some companies do not provide earnings guidance, but they provide everything else.
I'm just saying it's one way that a business can express its strategy.
No, it is, but it is a recommendation. So I'm telling you, this is going to be in the practice statement. It's going to be people look at the practice statement as a recommendation of good practice. You know what I mean? It's, if I read this, I would say, well, they are asking me to give guidance.
I think that's why we have to get the language right.
Yeah, maybe. Cédric.
Thank you, Hans. Well, we have been discussing the materiality topic. In our IFRS committee, we have some couple of remarks. Maybe the first one is that people were not that convinced that the matter filter would really be helpful in sorting out the issue, because it's maybe too broad or too vague, and it's difficult. Every matter could be relevant, and maybe what we suggested was rather to elaborate on different examples of what is actually relevant material for the company. And probably, for example, the fact that they had made a press release, any communication that has been done by the company is in fact something which is supposed to be material and which may be followed up in the report. The second question which was raised by the group was also, what does materiality mean, or for which party, for which stakeholder, since we understand that the project aims to provide some information to primary users, where in fact for such broader information the population and the expectation may be broader, and we see that already in France, where the law or there are some legal requirement that must be put in the management report, which provides or expects some information that may be relevant for maybe a broader population than only the investors, and that has also to be considered when we assess materiality.
I should just perhaps clarify, the intention with the material matters is that it would operate with the rest of the practice statement, and you can see how the objectives are starting to set the definition of what those matters would be, and when we get to the later streams and the describing strategy, business model, etc., then that's where the clarity on what is a material matter would come. And we would anticipate it would be a relatively small number of things in that context.
Linda?
Thanks. I wanted to come back to what Lisandro was talking about, because when I look at slide 19, I'd be more in the camp of what Nick was saying. So, for instance, in my old days in financial services, we'd make a statement that would say, you know, we'd like no more than 25% of our profit to come from our capital markets. And the reason we said that was because capital market was more risky than the big retail bank. So you're trying to signal to people that while you're going to take a certain amount of risk in that part of the business, ultimately you're not going to take so much risk. And then analysts would be free then to take their estimates of what your performance was going to be over future periods and model it out however they wanted to. So I just wanted to kind of give that perspective. I understand the concern about guidance, because based on our securities law, a lot of companies have stopped giving guidance just because it's. I think that's probably true in the U.S. too. But anyway, so I just wanted to comment on that. The other comment I wanted to make is, depending on how you word this, I think it's interesting you say the matters and then the materiality and material matters. But in fact, management commentary in our jurisdiction is required to be current as of the day that it's put out, not at the reporting date. Okay, so you have to take it for, and it's required to be forward-looking. So, and in that vein, there's often things that are not material from a quantitative perspective, and I think you were getting at qualitative, Hans, that should be discussed in the management commentary. We'd call it MD&A, and in particular, things like future growth prospects or future changes in technology or environmental concerns or whatever that could have a real impact on existing pieces of the business. And so however you frame that, you don't want to take away from that being that discussion being properly included in the management commentary. So I like what you're doing, except that I think you have to be careful how you word it so that you're not just telling people only put material matters in the management commentary. Like, it's the fine balance.
You?
Thank you. Just to have some preliminary and very quick comments on these two questions. First, we have no objections to the proposal to make distinguishment between the matters and the information on that matters. We think it will be helpful to some extent, but maybe in some cases in practice, it will be difficult to make the distinguishment. On question two, we think that the materiality used in the management commentary should be consistent with the materiality and the principles in the practice statement number two, because the MD&A is the additional narrative information based on the financial information, so it should follow the same principle and the requirements. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's proceed.
So, moving on to principles, I would like to highlight that all the qualitative characteristics in the identified and conceptual framework do apply to management commentary, but we decided to highlight the ones we thought deserved particular emphasis or further clarity to be applied to the information on management commentary. So, for completeness, the recommended approach is one based on a coherent narrative, also referred to as the linkage approach. And we would envision that supporting guidance would also include considering information used for internal decision-making, other capital market communications, and knowledge of external factors. For neutrality, we propose including guidance on the different aspects of neutrality, including overall tone and content, prominence, obscurity, or omission of matters, selection and presentation of matters, the range of potential outcomes, and consistency. Comparability, we would include guidance on comparability to information published outside the report containing management commentary, previous forecasts published by the entity, and common industry metrics. So the questions on principles are on page 25, and the first questions would be to if you agree with the proposed approaches on those three principles, and also the consultative group had highlighted verifiability as an important principle. Do you agree? And are there any other principles which you think could be highlighted or emphasized in the practice statement?
Alessandro?
I think the element of coherent narrative is a no-brainer in my view. It's good. I just give a little bit of detail on that because, for example, normally companies use a lot of non-gap measures to provide that kind of narrative. And it's important for them to be coherent over time. So I go to more of the detail, what the coherent means. And sometimes it's not that they're not using the same method, but they are using it partially. For example, they say, well, I exclude non-recurrent expenses, but I do not exclude non-recurring revenues, for example. So if you want to exclude non-recurring something, exclude everything that's non-recurring, not only the expenses. Someone did this calculation, 98%, 95% of non-GAAP measures, non-GAAP adjustments are negative, so the expenses that people are taking out. So I think this is. I just give more detail on that. I think it's more complicated, the principle of neutrality. I don't know if you're asking too much of management to be neutral about the prospects of future of the company they are managing. And I don't know if, because to be really neutral, you're going to say, well, this is a positive, this is a negative, this is a can do, this is a negative. Of course, I understand conceptually, but imagine a CEO coming to the market saying that, well, this positive, this is negative. What is your view? Well, my view is neutral. Well, can we go wrong? Yes, can we go wrong? Can we go right? That's why I don't see that. Maybe I understand conceptually, of course, in a perfect world, people will be neutral and biased. But don't you expect the management, especially the top management of the company, to be a little bit biased?
You have to get a clear goal.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Conceptually, I understand it. I just be aware of it's going to be a kind of principle that people are going to look at. They all come on. Of course not. So,
It's more to ensure that, because quite often the negative will tend to be either a really small footnote or like not given the prominence it needs and kind of hiding bad news. So we want to ensure that companies avoid that.
This is a different thing. So not hiding bad news, giving the full picture is different from being neutral. The difference of being neutral. So obviously, I was the Uber CEO another day on TV talking about the future of the transport system in the world. Of course, he's not being neutral. He has his views on that, how those things. So neutrality assumes some sort of independence of mind, independence of it. And I don't know if management will ever be able to. So I maybe give him a little bit more detail here, saying that giving the full picture, giving the bad news also. But expecting really people to be neutral, I think it's too ambitious.
What about the risk, though, that if we don't have some, I guess, firstly, we want to make sure it's balanced. It's not just good news that we have this sort of...
Also
that the good news isn't so ridiculously optimistic, it's completely unattainable. would we address that aspect?
I would settle for that more easily. Let's just say, well, give the full picture, have... Give the equal weight of the bad news, of the risks. In some business, that means giving the appropriate view of the risks of the business. So the risk 1, 2, 3, and 4, this can go wrong. I think that's a good one. I think JP Morgan last annual report, Jim Diamond put out, they wrote a big chapter to say what went wrong last year. So it didn't work, this didn't work, this didn't work, this didn't work. The first time I saw that. So I think it's a more balanced view, but it's not neutral. I mean, it's not neutral because they are giving their view. So I think balance would be a better word than neutral, I think.
Cédric?
Just to comment on neutral, what we suggested is actually we want to be factual describe factual facts. And maybe we could compare it with the auditability, if it's auditable, if it's possible to check what's information. It may also be interesting to be considered. Regarding the question of the coherence, we were struggling with one word which is used in the slide, talking about completeness. We were struggling whether it was rather exactly what we expect from consistency and coherence. Because completeness is very hard to figure out in such a report. Same for comparability. Comparability in time is a kind of coherence also and consistency. Comparability with the competitors may be much more difficult to organize and to describe, and it's probably from a practical point of view impossible to do, but that some industry use the same ratios and information makes sense, that's for sure. But comparability means also that there is an expectation that if another competitor communicates on such information, we also have to communicate on the same. It may not be relevant in any situation, so it's more difficult to apply. That was the comments. Thank you. Anne?
Just on the neutrality point again, we have to have something in here as an aspirational thing or something that we know what the goal is, in particular for regulators, if this is adopted into places, because the regulators need something that they go against and they need these principles of neutrality. We've got the word balanced in there as well. To accept that people may not be neutral in the way they present, that's on the one hand, but we still need it there as the goal of what's going on. I mean, there's a lot of evidence, a lot of academic work that analyses the MDs and As and tells us a lot about the tone and the bias that's in there. But I would imagine that analysts whose work is to read this, if they're that sort of analyst, I think they'd be able to read that tone for themselves as well. So I think we need neutrality.
Noble.
Yes, thank you. We support the initiatives that increase understandability of the document. So we support the concept of coherence. We also support the idea that the information should be provided through the eyes of management. And in that sense, we do have a little bit concerns about neutrality. I think it's you need more explanation of how neutrality ties into the eyes of management. But we support what's in here in terms of the slides. I think it's how you communicate the concept. In terms of comparability, our understanding is that comparability is about comparing things over time or across entities. The items in this slide seems to talk about more consistency with the other information the entity itself is providing, and I think it's more not really comparability, but more of a consistency in the information. And we also support that the management commentary should talk about forward-looking information. In that sense, I think it'd be difficult to put too much emphasis on verifiability. By definition, forward-looking information is very difficult to verify.
Paul?
Thank you. I think we, in terms of the principles, we're generally very comfortable with them, really would emphasize coherence. We've done some work in our financial reporting lab recently, and we came up with five principles that investors told us about that they really wanted management commentary to focus in on, particularly aligned to strategy, and I think you picked that up there, transparent. In context, and I'm not quite sure where that quite gets picked up in the framework here, reliable and consistent. Like others, I struggle with the word neutrality. I absolutely agree that with the sentiment underneath it, we have the term fair, balanced and understandable, or fair, balanced and comprehensive in our law. I actually like the detail underneath is fine. It's just the word neutrality just sort of doesn't really do it for me. I think to Anne's point around needing some help for regulators, I mean, we've been trying to regulate fair, balanced and comprehensive for a few years, and it is incredibly difficult unless you're inside the company. It then falls into what's the role of the auditors in that space, and we just issued a report yesterday on that. It's very difficult to expect the regulators to be able to pick up where something isn't fair and balanced or neutral because they just don't know the level of detail. I know companies find it difficult. We've had a few round tables with FTSE 100 chairs, and you know, much to our disappointment, they tell us that you couldn't possibly expect us to tell it how it really is, because we'll just get absolutely crucified by the markets, and with the markets as jittery as they are. That said, I mean, my argument on that is if management isn't actually telling it as it is, then investors will make it up. What to me is important for management to tell what they are doing to restore or rectify or address the issues that are where they're not performing as well as they might, because you're pretty certain the investors will have some idea, and therefore they expect that management will be able to push that forward. In terms of comparability, and on the slide there on page 22, I think the one that's sort of most challenging, I think, is, and we get mixed views from investors of how important it is, and I know there's a big exercise been going on in Canada around this, around absolute comparability within, and I think that's the point that Nobu was making, but comparability with other industry sectors becomes a little bit more challenging, because a lot of companies try and provide some of that information, but inevitably it's all calculated on a different basis, and therefore in a principles-based standard, how far can you really go in that? And I think one has to be slightly realistic on that. And maybe it's the industry analysts that will be pushing more in this than perhaps you can as a standard setter. But generally, we're broadly comfortable with the line of direction.
Elon?
Thank you.
There we are.
Sorry. So we AOSSG received two comments from Australia and Korea. So they were generally supportive of the step proposals, but however, they showed different views about the verifiability. So Australia agreed with the step proposal because the ability for the information disclosed to have the ability to be audited under a relevant assurance framework is important. And different national audit and assurance requirements might be that some type of assurance is required for any information accompanying the financial statement. Korea disagreed with the state proposal. While verifiability is highly assurable for financial information or quantitative information, applying verifiability to non-financial information or forward-looking information might be difficult. So if verifiability information is only provided in management commentary, it could discourage entities from telling their own story from the management perspective.
So, EH, was that an adequate summary?
Well, from Korea, we very much support the suggestion of your proposal. And my comment is not very different from what Mr. Park said. If I add just one more point, is that similar to Paul's suggestion, comparability is something we better be careful because different from financial reporting, management country, we better give much freedom to the preparer, to the company, so that they can tell their own story rather than just typical facts. And I think the story of individual company could be different company by company, and it could be very different industry by industry. So even though they are in the same industry group, they may have different business model, they have very different technology. Those new startup companies, they may have a totally different from story away from the industry group. So I think comparability is important, but at the same time, we better give them the freedom to specifically tell their own story.
Jim.
Similar kind of concepts or questions about the qualitative characteristics and maybe some more discussion about how that actually aligns. If the objective is to tell the story from the eyes of management, there seems to be a natural tension between the qualitative characteristics. Managements aren't going to have comparable views necessarily or comparable perspectives across companies, so that seems to be running at odds with comparability. If the idea is the eyes of management, the eyes of management aren't neutral. So how do you say this is the perspective from the eyes of management, but it's a neutral story? And I think each of these, and so maybe a little bit more introduction on how you're supposed to reconcile management's view with qualitative characteristics. And they seem to fit better in the context of defined elements where the objective, that's why we have assets, liabilities, things that are driven toward a comparable story, and MD&A or management commentary seems to run the opposite to that, which is now let's tell a different perspective. How does management see it? And those seem a little bit in conflict.
You.
Okay, thank you. 3 points. Firstly, we generally agree with the linkage approach, which is helpful to management to determine what kinds of information should be included in the MD&A. But we have some concerns about the completeness in slide 23, because we think the management should have some freedom, just as similar to others, that management should have some freedom to tell the story. So we are afraid that if we emphasize the completeness, maybe it will become a kind of template. So the management or the preparer will just copy the template to ensure completeness, rather than tell its own story, rather than provide entity-specific information. That's the first point. The second point, we support to provide guidance for comparability. It's very important. Just want to highlight that the comparability should not only be, the information should be comparable to other entities, but also the information should be comparable to the information from period to period. The third point, we support to emphasize the verifiability as a principle for mDNA, because the users will use this information for their decision making, so it should be reliable and verifiable. Thank you.
Linda.
Thanks. I want to make a couple of points, and I want to link it to the work I think that Paul mentioned, but on our framework for performance measures, we did a lot of interaction, particularly with users, and some of the lessons that we learned in that regard. So on your slide 21, I really like this slide. I like the way you talk about, in particular, I highlighted the words balanced view. That actually resonated with me more than neutrality. So when you think about the people that you're aiming this guidance at, while neutrality may be something that from a standard setter's perspective we're comfortable with, it might not communicate the message you're trying to get across, especially for a management commentary that is supposed to be through the eyes of management. So I would just encourage you to think about that, although I really like kind of the elements that you're trying to put together there on slide 21. With regard to then, you have consistency on this slide, and I just want to flip then to comparability. One of the big discussions we had, and certainly the user side of thing told us that in a perfect world, if they had their druthers, if you took every company in the same industry, they would segment exactly the same way, and they would calculate all the performance measures exactly the same way, and then they could compare everything. But as we realize, that's just not realistic. And so we ended up dealing with comparability kind of indirectly. While we encourage an entity to try to be comparable to the others in the industry, we focus more on consistency and transparency. And we linked those very strongly together by saying, be transparent what it is you're disclosing, be consistent period to period. And that put the users in the best position to get the information so they could assess comparability. So you have to be realistic about what you're trying to achieve and helping management try to get it out there, you know, kind of holding them accountable for that and trying to achieve that. So in the next iteration, which will be out next week, I think, you know, that's how we've tried to create that linkage. And we did encourage that if you're in the industry and you're choosing not to do a measure that most others in the industry are doing, you should actually explain why you don't think that's an important measure for your particular entity. So I like seeing that on slide 22. Just a quick comment on verifiability. We actually had spoken about verifiability in the framework, and we ended up backing away from that in the revision simply because we had an issue with the securities regulators, and it was becoming too difficult to stick handle that. But do think that to the extent that a standard setter ultimately, and this actually intersects in my mind with your statement on or your primary financial statement project, to the fact that you can keep these linkages to the extent that a standard setter takes some of these approaches and ultimately you can put some of those things in the financial statements, which we'll talk about in a bit, then you get past the hurdle of whether or not the elements of a management commentary can be verified because you get them into the financial statements and they're subject to audit. So it's interesting how some of these things actually overlap, and I think that's something that you should be keeping in mind as you move forward.
Andrew?
Thank you. I think most comments have been made by others, so I'll try and just be incremental. I agree, perhaps, that balance is a more appropriate word than neutrality, but I do think you need something, even if it's aspirational to an extent, to guard against an over-accentuation of the positive in these reports. On slide 18, there's a reference to completeness within the material on coherence. I hope that the principles are all mutually reinforcing in some respect. I slightly struggle with positioning completeness within coherence particularly. I think completeness could equally be an attribute of balance, for example. So I think it's a detailed point, but just stumbled over that second bullet point on the left of slide 18. On comparability and verifiability. I mean, these, among other of the objectives, are words used in the conceptual framework which the court will call for you in setting standards. And the implication here seems to be that the responsibility passes to preparers to actually achieve these outcomes in the context of much less prescriptive guidance. And I just wonder about how achievable and reasonable that is. I think we had on comparability, we had a similar discussion in the proposed principles of effective communication, if I recall correctly. And I think there was some pushback as to whether you can really put the onus on companies to make their reports comparable with one another to this extent. And I also wonder what even do we mean by comparability when it comes to the more narrative sections of these reports, descriptions of long-term value creation. If two entities in the same industry have reports that look rather different, then which one do you blame for the lack of comparability, is how I might put it. So, sure, the market forces and other factors might tend to encourage entities to use similar metrics, but if you don't want to define metrics, and I understand why you wouldn't do, then I'm not sure what you're really aiming to achieve by this. And I think to some extent a similar comment applies to verifiability, and again, particularly when it comes to the narrative sections, then how do we know what exactly does this mean? I'd just guard against using familiar words without being clear about the implications in a different context to the financial statements, but overall I think it's very much going in the right direction.
Sue?
Just following on from some of the comments about neutrality, which are really interesting because there's some aspects I hadn't thought about before, but and I think it's interesting this idea that maybe in this situation it's hard to ask management to be truly neutral, but I think all are saying we do want the picture to be a balanced picture, so you sort of see the ups and the downs and it's not an over-egged view of, you know, optimism. So I think we're all agreeing with that, but if we were to avoid the word neutrality because people are concerned that it might be unachievable or not understood and use words more like balanced and some of the other suggestions, would you not have a concern that we're sort of signalling something about what we mean by neutrality when we use it in other contexts? Because I think what we're trying to do is, because we really think this concept, the way I read it, I haven't spoken to the staff directly about it, but the way I read it was, this, we're trying to use the same sort of idea of neutrality that we use usually, mm-hmm. and we don't think about it differently. And I think what you're saying is partly maybe in the context of these types of documents, it doesn't work quite so well. But if we start moving away from that word or using different words in its place, is there not a risk we're implying something about neutrality more generally? Has anybody got that concern?
My question about neutrality is a characteristic, a feature of the speech, but it's also a feature of the speaker. So it's very hard for, if you are not neutral, by definition, to give a neutral account something. So it's almost asking to ask somebody else to write your report. Mm. Because if you are not neutral, by definition, because you are working the company, how do you do it?
But is that not something that we can deal with in the way that we express it, as opposed to avoiding the word altogether?
Yeah, but it's different than saying, well, be sure to mention everything that's negative, to give the same emphasis to the problems, to give the same emphasis to the risk, to ask somebody to be neutral. So try to be neutral about the IFRS Foundation. Can you be neutral?
Twice.
No problem. The report is neutral. No, I'm absolutely neutral. I don't know what I'm talking about. I just think that it's not possible. It's asking something that is intrinsically impossible to do. That's why you ask external third parties to do it. When you need neutrality, you ask external third party to do it, not a person that is involved.
But I think you can say exactly the same about the term balanced. Impossible to be balanced without your own organization.
I'm not mentioning the word balance. You may use a different framework. You say, well, pretty sure that you mention the risks, all the elements. Don't be over optimistic. Mention the risks. But that's more and more objective. So I have to mention the risks my business is facing. I don't need to be neutral to do this.
They tend to be very small, those risks.
But don't we have the same challenge just to test it? So, say, for example, I'm asking a bank to provide note disclosures to explain their views on credit risk, blah, 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 and when they're complying with IFRS 9, IFRS 7 now, and we want that to be neutral, so it's not skewed to get a particular outcome. It's meant to be balanced and factual.
Yeah.
Do we not have the same challenge that maybe management's going to tend towards wanting you to see
but
the
it's much easier,
it's not so bad picture?
Because it's much easier. You have a statistical analysis. You have all the forms to guarantee that you are doing a forecast that is... That's, for example, you're talking about the future economic forecast. You have third parties evaluating that. You can actually, even sometimes you don't know if you're neutral or not. You can even ask a third party to verify it. So it helps you to be neutral. But I'm talking about the future of a company.
But we're talking
I cannot about ask anybody else to.
Credit losses, it's a forward look.
No, yes, and understand. I just imagine that's all over the world, asking CEOs to be neutral, really.
Value in use calculations.
Sorry?
Value in use calculations.
Again, but again, let's talk about the economic forecast, IFRS 9, you're talking about. There are ways to validate that. Say that to be sure that I'm not being biased. I'm not using my own forecast. I do backtest analysis.
Are always taken on time?
Sorry?
That is why impairments are always taken on time?
No, of course not. That's not the answer. It's a rhetorical. No, of course not.
I'm not sure. I'd need to think about it.
Well, you're giving the precise figure that managers are non-neutral.
We'll have to talk about the meaning.
So asking some things that are not happen. You know what I mean? Is that realistic?
Paul?
I think the challenge is trying to capture all that you've got on slide 21 in one word. And I just wonder whether you're ever going to find one word that captures that. Now, I appreciate that you want something which is sort of easy to pick up and handle. But I was waiting to speak, I looked up what neutrality meant in the dictionary. And so the first one that came up here is the state of not supporting or helping either side in a conflict, disagreement, impartiality.
Yeah, I saw that too here. I went to the Oxford Dictionary first.
Yeah. I mean, I think in some ways impartial, because it's you actually want management to tell the things that have gone well. So you don't want to be neutral about and the things that haven't gone so well. But so if you're neutral, you don't want to say either side of that. That's the connotation of it I don't like.
I've got a feeling we might have misled you a bit. I'm just looking through the slides and we've got the word neutrality, but I don't think we've got the underlying words that are in the conceptual framework, which I don't have in front of me, but I think they actually explain it quite well. And so it's a bit difficult for us to discuss it on the run here, but I think that might solve some of the concerns people have with the expanded definition.
We're trying to get at. I don't think there's any problem with that at all. It's just the word.
The common example in the dictionary of neutrality is a judge. Somebody that's evaluating is a judge or something. Somebody that has nothing to do with the matter.
And those seem to fit better when the objective is for the board's setting standards, as opposed to telling management in your commentary you need to be impartial and act like you're disinterested in the results of operations.
And husband, maybe a comment here. I don't think it's. I understand that this is a problem, but we're not going to solve it putting the word neutrality on the standard. You know what I mean?
Raymond?
I mean, maybe what we need is...
Do you have a solution? Always expect at least one solution from newcomers.
It's not one word that we're looking for. I think it's probably a few words.
Yeah.
Balance, I think, it goes into it. And factual, I think, goes into it as well. And I don't know how we whittle it down into something that makes a lot more sense. But the way that I'm reading the word neutrality here is that it's not... middle of the road, or it's explaining both sides of the equation. And explaining both sides of the equation, I think you must get to a point where I think people are able to then make their own call as to how you have done. And yeah, but you're not going to get there by using the word neutrality in the current context.
Yeah,
now.
Of course. What's the answer?
Well, I think we have to listen to what he said and take into account, but I think Anne told us basically what we mean by neutrality, which is to eliminate bias. Mm. And I think the qualitative characteristics applies to the resulting report and is not qualifying the person. And so I was surprised with seeing this antagonism between the eyes of management and neutrality, because I would expect management to be able to look at its the economic reality of the entity with, you know, objective eyes, without any bias, so that they can indeed make good decisions because they have an objective view on the risk, the strengths, the weaknesses, which is complete and indeed balanced without bias. Otherwise, if you look at your entity with your heart and don't assess things on a neutral manner, you're not going to make the right decisions.
Right. It's obviously different from looking at the heart.
When an oil company makes a huge investment in a refinery that is supposed to exist for 20, 30, 40 years, I mean, I suppose that the company expects its management to be as objective as possible because there's a lot of money involved.
Yeah, but it's not neutral. It's objective, but it's not neutral. The compensation is linked to that decision. They're not neutral, even if they're very objective. If they're a calculating machine, they're not neutral. The pay is related to that.
Just one further comment to complicate it even further. It potentially is almost a challenge against the law in the UK because the director's duty is to promote the success of the companies. It does seem... I don't think that's helpful.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that you can put nonsense in your...
I'm not saying they put nonsense. You're going to the extreme. No, of course not. There's...
But I would expect that that promotion should not be by cheating others.
I agree with that, obviously. but this is where I think we've said it various different ways around the room, which is we agree what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, we're trying to put some order in the system. Yeah.
Okay.
Any other comments, solutions, skepticism? No. All right. So shall we?
It's good for
them. Right? Or shall we have a 5-minute break, or what shall we do?
We can have a 5-minute break.
Yeah. Let's have a 5-minute break.